everybody, and welcome to our monthly Care Partner Meetup. I'm Polly Dawkins, Executive Director of the Davis Finney Foundation, and I am joined, as always, by our fantastic panel, whom I will introduce here shortly. And we have a special guest again this month, Dr. Mark Mapstone. And without further ado, I am going to introduce Connie Carpenter Finney, our hostess with the mostest.
Wow, it's great to be here. It's great to be in the presence of Mark Mapstone again. This is so helpful for everybody to have a discussion about all things neuropsychology with our person with Parkinson's, and to be honest, with ourselves. So we're here to help you, the care partner. We will, of course, discuss your person with Parkinson's and strategies, but what we're really trying to do is help you. So please remember that up front. That's number one for us. I'm joined by Gail Gittin. If you're new to the chat, you need to know Gail. She is a person that was a care partner, lost her dear husband, Gene, 4 years ago. That's crazy. And still an ambassador with the Davis Finney Foundation, and such a lovely help to so many. Gail, thanks for being here. Pat Donahue is joining us from Las Vegas. Gail, by the way, is from across the street in Boulder, Colorado here. and Pat's joining us from Las Vegas, where he is a teacher, and he is hiding out in, it looks like, a break room today, or the chemistry room.
I'm in a science room.
In the science room. All right. Well, let's not do any experiments while we're online today. And thanks for being here. Pat's wife, Sid, has Parkinson's. And as you know, if you've been with us before, he's like an open book sharing strategies and difficulties as we all navigate this journey. If you don't know me, I'm one of the co-founders of the Davis Finney Foundation and married to the guy with the name on the foundation. Mark's joining us from UC Irvine in California. He has been an incredible ally to us as care partners and people with Parkinson's in helping us to understand this space. Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm Mark Mapstone. I am a frequent visitor to this support group and work with the Davis Finney Foundation for almost a decade, going on a decade now, in consulting roles and various other roles and giving talks and things like that. I'm a neuropsychologist, and I focus in the area of neurodegenerative diseases, and this is Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease, Huntington's disease, and other such things. I'm a professor in the Department of Neurology at UC Irvine, and my focus is trying to develop blood biomarkers of some of these diseases so that we can detect the disease in the blood prior to the symptoms start to occur. So wouldn't it be great if we knew that somebody was at high risk for getting one of these diseases, and then we could start therapies or treatments or things to prevent or slow the onset or progression? So that's my scientific focus. But I do spend a day in the clinic every week, in which I work with people who have Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, and other diseases. So my specialty is understanding how the brain produces behavior and thinking abilities.
And behavior is what we are here to discuss. I was recently at a conference. I think we could maybe just start a little bit with that, with the conference where I asked this was a Parkinson's conference, a lot of science, very interesting work being done. But I asked the psychiatrist after he gave a talk, why we as care partners didn't learn early on that our person with Parkinson's would most likely develop executive functioning disorder. Mark, you can clarify my terminology. And something that most of us notice, a difficulty in their decision-making. And he said, well, it's not all people with Parkinson's. It's a smaller percentage or whatever, but just wouldn't answer the question. And I think that it's unfair to us as care partners not to accept this as a logical outcome of a highly taxed brain, our person with Parkinson's, as they fatigue through coping with the disease, right? And so their decision-making does become I call it into question, right? And have to kind of take over a lot of duties that I would not have normally had to take. And yet when the leading, I would say, movement disorder specialist in the world was also at the conference, Dr. Bas Bloem from Holland, immediately when he got up to give his closing remarks, leaned into the fact that, yes, we have to accept the fact that that decision-making is compromised, that Parkinson's, and he clarified the difference between Parkinson's dementia and normal dementia. And dementia is such a scary word, and you know, we need a different word for it. So can we lean into that a little bit, Mark?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, there are still folks who hold on to this idea that Parkinson's disease is primarily a motor disorder. And it has very, very obvious motor features where we get the tremor, we get the stiffness and rigidity, and we get the slowness of movements of the bradykinesia and the gait problems, the balancing gait problems. But there is clearly becoming more recognized this notion of non-motor symptoms of Parkinson's disease. And these include behavioral symptoms, emotional symptoms, and cognitive symptoms. And these are the non-motor symptoms, in addition to a number of biological features like sympathetic nervous system and constipation and things like this. But what we're focusing on today is more the cognitive and behavioral. And these are becoming more and more appreciated. And unfortunately, it doesn't quite get out there to everybody at the same rate. There are early adopters and people who are on the front lines and see this because they're with Parkinson's, people with Parkinson's all the time. And they know this. And clearly, as a care partner for a person with Parkinson's disease, you are also on the front lines and you see this day to day, and it's hard to ignore. These are very obvious features that we see. A small percentage of people with Parkinson's can remain relatively intact with regard to cognitive function throughout the course of their disease. But really, the majority are probably going to experience something. And most of the time, it's this thing we call executive function, which is a little different from dementia. If you'd like, I can go into maybe a definition of those two.
I think that would be great. It's always good to have a primer so we understand what we're talking about, and then to jump into the more personal aspect of it, because I know
sure.
Some comments too.
Yeah, so just to define what we're talking about, executive function is the result or cognitive processes that result from more or less the frontal lobes of the brain and related areas that are highly specialized for doing the unique things that we as humans can do. These are executive planning, decision-making, control of sort of base primal instincts, kind of keeping those down, you know, not saying things that you shouldn't say in front of people that you shouldn't say them in front of. That's an executive function. That's something that we do in order to keep those behaviors down and sort of socially in context. You'll know that children develop these executive functions over time. If a toddler sees cookies on the counter, he or she is going to run up and grab them because he or she wants the cookies. But as adults, we're not going to do that because we know it's not appropriate because they're not ours, for example. So we develop these skills over time. And some of these neurological diseases also degrade these executive functions over time. So you can have the slow erosion of decision-making, planning, and the ability to multitask and to maintain socially appropriateness in social situations. That's largely executive functions, but that's very separate from things like memory. They do interplay, but memory is very different. That's a different part of the brain that controls that. So executive function are these areas of functions that emerge from the frontal lobes of the brain, and they are uniquely affected by Parkinson's disease, and it's just the biology of the disease. Dementia is something quite different. Dementia is an umbrella term, and it refers to a loss of something that was there before, slowly over time, typically, that affects your daily function. And this can have many causes. Parkinson's disease is one cause of a dementia that affects your ability to function due to cognitive problems. Alzheimer's disease is another kind of dementia. Head injury, repeated traumatic head injury, so it's another form of dementia. Sunstroke or heat stroke is kind of a form of dementia because it affects your capacity to think clearly so that you really can't do what you need to do to stay independent, but it's reversible. Vitamin B12 deficiencies, thiamine deficiencies, thyroid function. There's a lots of different reasons why your cognitive abilities might be impaired so that you can't act out your daily activities in a safe way. Some are reversible, some are not.
Mark, let me interrupt one thing, because the other thing that's not really said that often when we talk about dementia and Parkinson's is exhaustion and how fatiguing the disease itself is. And so maybe that has a different biological basis, but with the same outcome, right? And we don't know as care partners what it feels like to live in the body of a person with Parkinson's, but I can see how fatiguing it is, right?
Yeah.
And I know if I wake up in the morning and I haven't slept well, which most people with Parkinson's don't sleep that well, if I wake up and haven't slept well, my decision-making goes downhill, right? And I'm more reactive, I'm more emotional, I'm less fun to be around. And so I think, you know, where does that play in this kind of hierarchy of the person with Parkinson's and their capability cognitively?
Well, yeah, cognitive abilities kind of stay at the top of the hierarchy. And so they rely on a lot of different things, including your energy, your, you know, getting good quality sleep, being well nourished and well fed, being in good fitness. All of these things contribute to good brain function for cognition. And all of these things can be affected in people with Parkinson's disease. So sleep is affected, diet is affected often, energy levels are affected. There's the emergence of depression and anxiety in some people, and apathy, for example. All of these things can affect your thinking abilities. You're absolutely right. We've all experienced this. You know, a poor night of sleep, or you've got stress, you know, something big is happening, you're about to give a big talk or something like this, or something stressful, you're not thinking straight. And all of these things are a daily occurrence, or can be, in somebody with Parkinson's disease. So it's something I think as care partners, we need to be supportive and understanding. And I think that's where being a good care partner really starts, is to having the knowledge to know that this is what my person with Parkinson's disease is going through. It's not because he or she is doing this on purpose, although I'm not ruling that out. Some people do things on purpose, but many times, most of the time probably, this is a function of the disease.
Yeah.
This is the disease talking. So when they're tired and can't think straight, that's Parkinson's disease. It's not because they're being resistant or, you know, want to object or, you know, not being involved. They can't. They can't. It's affecting their brain and their behavior.
Yeah. Okay. This is great to hear and to just kind of sit with for a second, because again, even our doctor, the last time I asked him to, you know, do some neuropsych eval on my person with Parkinson's, said he doesn't need that. I think when the care partner is reporting they need it, the doctor needs to listen. And just for all the reasons that you're saying, and for the last question that just came in on the chat, which is there a medication that can help? And maybe we could talk about that. I don't know if you want to launch into that right now, or Gail, if you want to jump in with some thoughts, or Pat.
Well, yeah, I've been talking a bit. Why don't Gail or Pat jump in for a little bit, and then I can.
Okay, we'll come back to that.
Pat, I could start.
All right.
When I listened to Dr. Mapstone's talk last month, you know, a lot of guilt flooded in, because when a person first gets Parkinson's, you know, all you do is worry about the tremors and things like that. But it would have been so important to me to know what was going on as far as his ability to recall or to be who he was. I remember how hurt I was during it was my birthday, and he sort of like blew it off. And he couldn't even express to me that I'm kind of confused about something. So, you know, now in retrospect, I feel very guilty about missing a lot of cues that I didn't know about, because he hadn't even been diagnosed yet. And even when he was first diagnosed, it wasn't right on the top of the list about what to do. It was more like, is he going to lose his balance and take these pills and take that? But no one prepared me for this change of a memory and personality and decision-making. So I didn't know, and I would get angry and annoyed and frustrated But if I had all that information, I would be able to see it with a different light and be understanding. And that's a problem with caregivers. We need to be understanding 24/7. And as we all know, it's not possible in our nature. And the thing that I most that I concentrate on is all the mistakes I made. And I don't concentrate on the myriad of pluses I should get on my or stars I should get. I don't know why we always remember our screw ups. So be kind to yourself. You can't be all things to all people and to everything. You just can't do it. Do the best you can and be kind to yourself. It's going, you know, you're going to have these situations, but you have to understand, first of all, everyone on this this talk, I'm sure, has his day in and, you know, it's day in and day out. So be kind.
Yeah, that's hard to do sometimes, but it's important to do. We've been dealing with executive functioning, the lack of it since when Sydney was still working as a school teacher. She was teaching a second grade class and would forget that they were at lunch and wasn't able to, you know, she's busy doing one thing. She had to go get the kids in from lunch and things like that. It started to become a problem. And that's when we turned on the retirement plan. But as we've gone on, you know, for the last 10 years or so, it's been even more so. And I hear about it all the time. And sometimes I forget. And this is where, you know, what we were talking about before is how we handle the lack of executive functioning. You know, why don't you remember where you did that? I mean, the other day I had a coupon that I needed to go to the store with. And I went back, I drove to the store and I went, drove home to get the coupon because I forgot it. And then the coupon wasn't there. Well, she said that she threw it away. I said, why would you throw it away? It's in my box. Don't throw the things. She just, I'm always doing stuff. I have to always be doing something. I said, okay. And I got angry, but at the same time, I devised another way to get that coupon back. And so I was okay. And so we were able to, you know, I called her and said that, hey, I found another way to get the coupon. All's good. Hope you're doing well. But it's a constant battle. And lately I'm finding myself trying to remember back when these things weren't a problem and what was it like then? But even though that's probably not always healthy to do, I'm beating myself up this week, and I've been doing it a lot, but.
So let's ask Dr. Mapstone that question. How can we as care partners not beat ourselves up? Because both Gail and Pat brought that up. It's like, you think about why do we focus on the things we're not doing well, or we perceive we're not doing well, or our intolerance at given moments, which are, you know, we also have to be able to express our feelings, right? So what do you think? What's a good strategy for our care partners?
Yeah, Connie, that's a great, you're digging right into the meat of what came out in those two sets of comments. And that struck me as well, both what Gail and Pat are saying is this feeling of, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I kind of got essence of a little bit of guilt, a little bit of shame, kind of feeling inadequate. And the ability to take on the struggles that you're taking on. And I think, Gail, you said you used the word grace and, you know, forgiveness of oneself, and the ability to say that I'm a real person too. And I have my own thoughts and feelings. And this is hard for me too. And it's really hard to take on the burden of being a care partner for someone with a slowly neurodegenerative, slowly progressive neurodegenerative disease. And we have to take time out for ourselves to take comfort in the fact that we're doing the best that we can, if you are. What it really reflects, I think, in my mind, is this feeling of discomfort. You're in a place that you don't know exactly what you should be doing. You're in a place where you're caring for this person who you love and care about so much. And you're not exactly sure what the next steps are. You're not exactly sure what you should be doing and how to do it best. You want to be the best that you can be for this person. And sometimes we make mistakes, and it's the reality of accepting that you're going to make mistakes, and hopefully they aren't big ones and hopefully they're small ones. But if it comes out of a place of caring, it comes out of a place of knowledge and compassion, then we need to be able to turn inward and give ourselves grace for that, and being a person, a human who's going to make mistakes, and that's okay.
So say that again. We have to turn inward and acknowledge we're doing the best we can. How can we do that in the heat of, or do you recommend just writing that down somewhere and revisiting it, because it's pretty hard to, when you get agitated and when you feel like you're screwing up? I mean, what's another, you know, to get that grace and that's where the breathing exercises can come in too, right? But then you have to come out of that thinking, I'm doing the best I can, right?
Yeah. I think you can build that into the structure around your life. You can build that into your daily routine or your weekly routine, so that you make space for yourself to capture that feeling of being able to turn inward and say, what am I really feeling here? And I'm not reacting to the discomfort of the situation or the guilt that I feel that I didn't react the right way to that person at that time. That you need some space to be able to absorb and reflect. And it requires, I think, in my opinion, introspection, the ability to look inward and say, I'm a good person. I'm doing the best that I can for my person with Parkinson's. Yeah, I screwed that one up, but there wasn't a huge outcome. I feel bad about that. I need to let that go. You can build that into your weekly routine with some time to yourself, having support and structure to have respite care so that you can go out and take that time to go sit on a park bench and think, or to take the walk or get on your bike, take a ride. You've got someone who's going to come in and take care of your person so that you can go out and do this for your own mental health. And this is a recurring theme that we've had many, many times that I've been on this call, is that you really need to take care of yourself in order to be the best care partner for your person with Parkinson's disease, and build that in. I mean, you can't take it all on yourself. You need to build that in with support, structure, and a framework that allows you to operate the best that you can, and recognize that you're not Superman or Superwoman. It doesn't work that way. You're just not going to be that person. If you recognize that up front, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to add one thing, because I know when we have our listeners, maybe 90% of you are caring for your spouse. So we tend to use that as our frame. And I want to apologize to those of you who are listening and you have a parent or even a child, child with Parkinson's. So, but I know from my adult children that this advice would be helpful, even though they want to see. One of the hard things as adult children, I think, too, is we sometimes, you know, they're a little slow to intercede sometime with some techniques, just because they're used to a different hierarchy in the relationship. But I just wanted to acknowledge and say we understand that not all of you are caring for a spouse. And a lot of this can feel, especially since Gail, Pat, and I have been dealing with spouses. But I'm sure, Mark, you probably get adult children of people with Parkinson's too that come into your clinic that are also part of the care team. And by the way, in saying so, any of you with adult children need to make sure you're including them in your care team so that you can expand your care team. And if you don't know what to ask for help, think about how frustrated you get in moments when you feel like you haven't done the right thing. And what if that person could help you by making sure they were there several days a week, your adult child, to lend a hand and let you get out, or listen to you when you need someone to talk to, and other strategies, right? And I know that both Gail and Pat have leaned into their adult children. Some do it better than others, right?
Yeah.
Well, family relationships can be complex, and there's not always the same sort of support that you might expect from different members of your family. But I think it's really critical to celebrate wins as well. And this kind of gets to Gail's point about, why do we always remember the bad things? You know what? We don't often take time to celebrate the wins. And Connie is an elite athlete. You know, you don't sit around moping about the race that you lost. You go out and you celebrate the wins, and you learn from the wins. What did I do right this time? And Let's make sure we integrate that. And, you know, to really be thoughtful, I think being a thoughtful person in the sense of what are you actually doing and why are you doing it? This is about mindfulness. This is the buzzword these days, be mindful, meditation, those sorts of things. But it really helps a lot to just sort of sit back and say, what, be introspective to understand what you're feeling and what you're thinking, and then to use that to do, to be better, or to, you know, be able to let go of things where you didn't quite perform where you needed to.
Yeah. And I think Davis also had talked about this, you know, in their original motto of the Davis Finney Foundation was every victory counts. And what he meant by that was once he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, he was no longer obviously celebrating victories in bike races. Although I do want to just interrupt to say our daughter-in-law won the Tour de France Femme a couple weeks ago. The women's version of the Tour de France was won by our daughter-in-law. So we were celebrating that and still feel really good about it. So it's nice. I mean, many of you were watching the Olympics. It's nice to celebrate the success of others too, even if you have to step out of, you know, and remember what it feels like to celebrate, right? And so, yes, I'm still buzzing and I get a lot of thumbs up here. I love it. From her win, I've allowed myself to enjoy it, you know? And so that's the other thing as a care partner is allowing yourself to enjoy something along the way, right? So in Davis's case, you know, when he was diagnosed, he realized the win was being able to still go for a bike ride or getting a wonderful hug from his daughter or his wife and things like that, you know, and just reframing. And so I think that's some of what Mark's talking about too, is this capacity to reframe. And when you feel really stuck, if you have mindfulness in your quiver, in your, you know, if you have an app on your phone, something you can just lean into and listen to for 10 minutes, you know, you might, those of you who are stuck and can't get away from your person with Parkinson, at least it lifts you out of that situation. Or go to YouTube and watch Kasia Niwiadoma win the Tour de France Femme, and I guarantee you're going to get really happy.
You won by 4 seconds. So, I mean, that was such an amazing race. And we, yeah. It's worth watching 3 times or more.
Yeah, and also leaning into the whole thing of that, which is like every little thing matters and counts, right? And I think that's something that she realized through her athletic career. And we have to realize in our caregiving, it's not just one thing that gets you to, you know, feeling like you've had a victory. It's so many little things. Yeah. And the capacity to allow yourself to reset or get a do-over, because that's another thing Davis and I talk about too. And you're right, Mark, when you have a bad race, you can't dwell on that. You have to reset and say, how am I going to get better? What am I going to do better that allows me to feel like I'm worthy and that I'm getting stronger or whatever the case may be? And you know, that's a big part in the care partner space. Polly, do you want to, do we want to lean into any questions? I see a lot of chat.
We have a lot of questions and we have a lot of questions left over from last month.
Okay.
And there are some similar themes. So folks in the audience, if we don't get to your specific question, we hope we pick up the theme that you're experiencing. One person, I think it was Bruce, asked or said that mental decline, dementia, cognitive decline is his person's greatest fear. Is that a common fear? And what should his response to his person with Parkinson's be?
Well, I mean, I could start by asking Tani, Gail, and Pat, is this something that's been expressed to you by your person with Parkinson's, the idea that there's going to be cognitive decline?
I always remember Jean using this phrase, Gail, I'm doing the best I can, I'm not doing it on purpose. When he used to say, I'm not doing it on purpose, that just absolutely slayed me. So, you know, he knew, you know, every time he'd say, just show me how to do this one more time on the computer. And his one more time was 50, 60 times. And he knew, I don't know. He was a rare, wonderful individual.
But Gail, was he afraid? Was there fear involved? I think that was maybe to the heart of it.
Not that he showed me fear. He showed me more. He showed me frustration, not fear.
Frustration, not fair. What about you, Pat?
We do a check-in every now and then, you know, when something comes up, you know, is that Parkinson's? Is that dementia? Or is that cognitive or what have you? And she assures me that it's not, that it's usually a Parkinson's thing, that, you know, when there's so many different aspects to Parkinson's that it could be any number of things. But I think we worry about more about my cognitive decline than hers. Yeah, but I mean, like I was out riding Saturday and I where I was, I'm going, where the heck am I? I had already been there. Somehow I had looped around and came back different way.
Pat, I think this is important because I think what happens to us as care partners, and Mark, maybe you can focus on this a little bit, is that we get so, we're so overburdened at home and in our minds, because, and Gail, you've talked about that, you know, wishing you could put your brain on a shelf so you could stop thinking and ruminating on things. And I think that as we get older, Pat, is more difficult for us cognitively. Well, and there's a distinction.
What's happening with me is that, you know, I am in a job this year that's different than ever in my whole career. I'm with very strongly intellectually challenged students in the middle school and high school. And I'm constantly 100% of the time, thank goodness for today, this gives me an hour to get away from it. But it's ongoing. It's going, it's always, you know, okay, what are we doing next? It's no time for a break. And then I go home and Sydney wants me to be doing, okay, what are we doing next? And I just want to, you know, bail. And somehow I've got to, I'm working on how we can work on that together. And we're getting there. There's a lot of things that we're doing. One of the things that I do is, and now I see, I'm sorry, this shows my worry about myself, is that I forgot what that thing that we do is. One of the things that I always, if we're in the heat of the moment, if I'm wrong, I need to admit that I'm wrong and then go from there. If she's wrong and I know that she's wrong, or if it's just a misunderstanding, that if I'm coming from the proper perspective, the proper place, then we need to both understand that it's not one or the other. It's, you know, we just need to work whatever it is out instead of coming unglued on each other.
Yeah. And, so the key is working together, right, Mark? And I think to answer the question on fear, because you want to, you know, I see some comments in the chat too on denial. I think denial is a big part of anyone's reaction to Parkinson's or to cognition deficits that they might feel. And by the way, I think if you feel a cognitive deficit, that's probably better than not, right?
Yeah.
So, yes. Yeah. So I don't know that it answers your question specifically, but maybe we could talk a little bit about, you know, confronting that as just and working around it. And then we could talk about drugs and other therapies that might be helpful for us as care partners. I think mindfulness is a huge one for both the care partner and the person with Parkinson's. That's my bias. But there are medications and there are other ways to sharpen ourselves.
Yeah.
When Pat was talking, the word that came to my mind was demands. So many demands on you at work, at home. So many demands.
Yeah,
it's
and if you're both retired, I mean, if you're both retired and you're both at home, there's still a lot of demands. Mm-hmm. There's the financial demands. There's the planning demands.
Right.
And it's all of that.
And it's all you. It gets piled up on you, and demands are become a mountain. But we have to tease them out and decide which ones we need to address, and which of the demands we can just let it go.
By the way, I better say this. I my job is one that I've never had before. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I mean, I've had all sorts of pieces of it, and I'm putting it all together for this. But I do love it. I do love my students, and they are amazing to work with. Okay, just wanted to clarify that.
That's always good to hear.
Mark, Cynthia wonders, is marriage counseling worthwhile at this point, or is it a waste of money given that her person with Parkinson's has cognitive decline?
Oh, I think that there's always opportunities for growth. And if you both approach it in the right frame of mind, I think that growth is always a possibility. So if you're feeling like lost, or you're feeling like things aren't working out and you really need some clarity, I think that if not for your partner, at least for you, perhaps you could get something of benefit out of talking therapy and counseling, marriage therapy, if you're having marital difficulties. I feel very strongly about the need for insight-oriented psychotherapy, which is the ability to sit with somebody who's going to guide you through this introspection that we've been talking about, the ability to look inward and really understand what you're feeling. Because lots of times we go through our days and our lives without really understanding why we do what we do, and really kind of pulling out those feelings that are in there driving our behavior and putting them on the table and looking at them and saying, why do I feel that way? What's the root cause of that? And a lot of them are very basic fears. These are things like insecurity, the fear of being left alone, trust and mistrust. A lot of very basic fears are driving some of our behaviors. And if we can only get to understand the relationship between this behavior that might come out as aggression or irritability or resistance, might actually be insecurity, or it might actually be a failure of trust. And if you can go with someone who can help you pull those things out that are deep down inside you, put them on the table and take a good look at them. And it doesn't have to be all in one session, you do it all at once, but slowly over time, learn to examine those and be introspective and understand what's going on inside. You can understand your behavior a lot better, and you can understand your partner's behavior a lot better. So a good therapist that practices this kind of approach, I think, could help you, and there's potential for growth at any stage of any relationship. So I would say yes. I would say go for it. What do you have to lose? If things are not going well and you're unhappy, would you rather go away saying, well, I tried everything I could, or would you rather say, well, I don't know if it would have worked? I would say go for it.
Yeah. That's great advice. Polly, want to follow up?
That follows up with a question that we got from last month, from somebody who said, lately I've been feeling like it's too late to keep trying to find new things. I'm the main one pushing for everything since 2019. When is it too late? And I think what I'm hearing you say is it's never too late.
Well, yeah, I read that one from the summary of last week or last time. That's a bit of a red flag for me. I think if I hear that in a person that I'm talking to in a clinical situation, I would think I've got to explore that a little bit more as a clinician, as a professional. I would worry about mild symptoms of hopelessness in that person, and whether that's the symptom of depression or dysthymia or a reactive disorder in the care partner, about this hopelessness. And there may be benefit to talking with someone in personal therapy. And again, I've talked about this before, that a therapist does not have to be someone you pay, that you go into some place and you sit on a couch and you talk with this person and you pay them. A therapist is a good friend. A therapist is a pastor or a rabbi or somebody who's religious who can just sit and talk with you. It could be a child, an adult child. It could be, it could be anybody that you get support from, that you can unload a little bit and pull out those introspection things that we talked about before. It doesn't have to be a professional setting. Wherever you get benefit is critical. And I think going back to that issue of fear that your person with Parkinson's feels, I think that that fear can evoke those strong feelings in you as a care partner as well, because you see this person that you've known to grow as an adult over 20, 30, 40 years of your marriage together, or since you've known them, and they're not the same anymore. And you know that, and that person knows that. And it can cause fear in you. And it's important to understand and recognize what that means for you.
So just stop. And that's another question we always get too, is my person doesn't seem to be the same person I married. And
They're not. I mean, they just aren't. And truly, as you live over 10, 20, 30, 40 years of marriage with someone, you're not the same either. I mean, nobody's the same. We all change and we all grow. Sometimes in good ways and sometimes in not so good ways, but we're not the same as the 25-year-old that you married. That's just not going to happen. And that's partly aging, but in Parkinson's disease, it's also the disease that's changing the person.
Yeah. And I think with several people, their person changes so much, they almost don't recognize them, and I hear that a lot. And that makes it really hard. And it's hard too for adult children looking at their parent. And, it's hard to if your children don't live close, to keep them informed, you know, as to how things are going. But if you do have adult children that you're close with and you can talk with them and be more honest, it will help them, you know, navigate as well, and also help you, because it's a bit of an unloading, and it's kind of to the capacity of what they can accept. But I think it's going to help you in the long run if you're able to, as Mark said, you know, talk to a friend, maybe a clergy person, or you know, if you're lucky, you find the right therapist. But very hard for people to find that person, and sometimes it takes months. And so, you know, don't wait. See who you can lean into now. And so often I've found that people that listen better to you may be people you met that didn't know your person with Parkinson's before they were diagnosed. You may have a circle of newer friends who understand you where you are right now, and also can see your person for what's happening, and probably think you're like a angel looking after, you know, yeah. your person. But we also got the question last time too, Polly, of how to deal with when someone asks the care partner, how are you doing? And fine is not an appropriate answer if you're not fine. And you won't get someone to listen to you if you answer fine. So you have to figure out who you can answer more accurately with. You know, I'm barely managing, some days better than others, parts of days better than others. What's the right answer? If it's someone you know you don't really want to disclose with, fine is fine. But otherwise, it's really not. And so think about that too in your relationships, and take a hard look at who you've got there that might be able to help.
I think that sort of feeling really highlights this underlying tension between needing to be vulnerable in order to dump and get support for yourself, but also needing to be the rock for your person. Yeah. And this dynamic tension between, I have to be strong, I have to take on all these responsibilities because my person with Parkinson's can't, and now it's all on me. But also, in order to be strong, then when someone says, or sorry, to be vulnerable, when someone says, how you doing? And you say, I'm fine, but you're not really fine. You're still being strong and you're not being vulnerable yet. And it's the ability to be able to move between those two states. And we get so stuck as care partners in this state of, I need to be strong. I'm the only one that's doing this. Who else is going to do it if not for me? And I need to be this person. And you can't live like that. Particularly if you're building up all of the burden on yourself, you need to be vulnerable sometimes. And you need to do that in a safe place where you know that someone's just not going to blow you off. They're going to listen to you. They're going to take you seriously. And they're going to help you work through. And even if it's just a pat on the hand and say, I'm with you, I support you, I care for you. Sometimes that's all we need. And that's all that anybody needs. But it's this tension that needs to be resolved in care partners to be both the rock at sometimes and be very vulnerable and be able to take care for yourself at other times. And that's an individual approach. I mean, there's no broad brush. Here's how you do that. You've got to come up with ways to do that.
Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that was fine. It doesn't have to be a therapist you pay for. That's my takeaway.
No.
Because no. I've got friends that I could go and talk to. And, you know, Sydney's always telling me, you need to go see somebody. I said, I don't have time, but I do have time to go to dinner with a friend or something and lay it on the table.
Yeah. And if they're good friends, they'll listen to you. Yeah. They'll sit with you, because you would probably do the same for them if they had a spouse. You know that you would do that. And so sometimes you need to take that.
Sometimes, Mark, it's easier to sit and listen to other people and try to be of help. That's part of the problem too. So being vulnerable. Yes. And Pat and Gail know that because they're ambassadors with the foundation and they sit and help a lot of people navigate this process.
Gladly.
So, what's up?
I said gladly.
Yeah, you do. I know. All right. We have 10 minutes left. And wow, this has been so great. But some rapid fire answers might be in order now.
Two questions around executive dysfunction or executive function issues. Is there a medication to help with that? And the second question related is there another resource, like a social worker, or who can help with executive function in a person with Parkinson's?
I'll start with the second question first, because that's easier to answer. There are people that can help. And the idea is to make sure you understand what you're dealing with first, and that this person is actually having these sorts of troubles. Your care team should help you with this. And I know that there's variations in who has access to what, but any team that has a neuropsychologist or a cognitive neurologist or a speech and language pathologist, or even just a clinical psychologist, can help you with these sorts of issues. Cognitive rehab is one form of a way to get at executive dysfunction. Medications, there are no direct medications that you can say, I'm going to be a better decision maker if I take this particular pill. However, it's very clear that your cognitive functions, in addition to your motor functions and emotional state, do fluctuate with the dopamine agonists or dopamine medicines that you would take, Sinemet, those sorts of typical medicines. So as you get down on your dose of Sinemet, you're going to maybe experience more cognitive problems in addition to more motor problems or emotional problems. So I wish there were an easy answer to the executive medicine thing, but there's nothing pops to mind that's going to make you think more clearly. Other than regulating with your dopamine.
So all those things were being offered up online to buy. Don't go there.
Probably not. I'm not going to name any names, but you see them on late night TV and the ads show up. I have not seen evidence that I would consider rigorous enough to recommend anything in my practice. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you can't even tackle that without really expert, a discussion with your, neuro or movement disorder doc first, I guess, but also with a more, more aligned specialist like Mark, and they're hard to find. So, yeah. So that's difficult. Somebody did mention the drug rivastigmine.
Rivastigmine, they're mentioning lysine, you've got Aricept. These are all medicines lysine is a supplement, but rivastigmine and memantine and these other drugs, these are all medications for dementia, and they're typically used in Alzheimer's disease and in people with Lewy body disease, and be used in people with Parkinson's dementia. Not great evidence at this time for them being beneficial. Some people can see some improvement, but it's going to be mild. It's not going to be, wow, he's definitely better, or she's markedly better. Probably not going to see that. And that, I'm just setting expectations. Your mileage may vary.
So no magic pill. Some of it is just lifestyle, and particularly sleeping better if that's possible, but that is so hard too. And so what else do we have, Polly?
Yeah, one person mentions that she said, I hate how our marriage sometimes seems almost like a parent-child instead of spouse-spouse, and many people agreed with that. Is there a way to pivot back to spouse-spouse or maximize the spouse-spouse time?
Yeah, I would have to know a little bit more about parent-child. Is that more that the behaviors are being more demanding like a child, or is it more that the partner is taking care of everything and therefore it's a parent-child?
Hmm.
I would say from my standpoint, and feel free to weigh in the chat, but from my standpoint, it does feel quite often like you're managing a toddler with some of the decision-making and the speed at which you as the adult in the relationship might feel like you're having to make decisions. I have that sensation quite often. My person's quite high functioning, but I used to like sharing the decision-making more. And so I think that's maybe what it feels like, Mark. I think it's a hard thing to move away from, because you actually have lost the person's lost their capacity to make those decisions in a timely fashion that's necessary for the situation. If that makes sense.
Yep. No, absolutely. This is where you need to, if you can, extract yourself out and use the information that we talked about today, which is, this is the disease. This is not him. This is not him behaving like a child. He's not throwing a tantrum and wants to get his way. He can't do it. He cannot. His brain is different now, and he can't do this. So it's something that it is extremely hard, particularly after many years of being with this person, to recognize, wait, you always used to be able to do this. We had such a good time doing this together, and now you don't do this. You don't want to, or what is your resistance? It's not resistance. He can't. in most cases. I mean, it may be true that some people do this, but it's more likely he's not able to do this.
Yeah, not able. And so separating that, that's actually not an adult-child relationship. That's actually your current relationship. And try to keep the love in there. You know, try to keep hugging and kissing and holding hands. And, yeah. You know, just remind yourself of where the attraction began, and know that a lot of it does not reside in their cognitive function any longer. And that's just that's the transition. And it's our capacity to not deny that, but accept it and keep rolling. You know, it's not going to be easy. None of it's easy.
No, it sucks, frankly. I mean, this is not a fun thing to deal with, and it shouldn't be. But as an adult, as the person who is now in charge of the couple moving forward, I think it's important that you have this perspective that this is not somebody who's willfully doing something, in most cases, against our wishes. This is somebody who just can no longer do this.
Yeah. Also, exercise. We haven't really mentioned that today. But again, everyone knows exercise is important for neuroplasticity, but also for just to feel good. And we always lean into that for the person with Parkinson's, and quite often forget to say, you need exercise too. And that means getting outside if you can, and if not, creating an environment in your home where it works, or making sure you have someone that can sit with your person with Parkinson's if that's required so you can get out. And that's a huge prescription for all of us to remember. And we lean into getting our person to Parkinson's, to their physical therapy, to their classes, and then we forget ourselves. So if you're not taking care of yourself, start doing it. It's not too late. It's never too late.
Never too late.
Thank you all. See you back on Tuesday, October 1st.
Wow. Great.
Thanks.
Take care, everyone.
Thanks, Mark.
Yep, you bet. Bye.
Bye.